Media app, and we invite you to.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, solid. Right on.
As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
You know, the skies are blue and it's Friday. Hard not to be doing well.
Yeah, man. There's something good to be said about both of those things. It really is, man. And
let me say,
huh?
Say them. Maybe we should say those good things.
So that's coming from the peanut gallery. It's Friday, and that means my co-host Sandy Williams is on the line. Hey, how you doing, Sandy?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm reasonably good. I am on the line rather than I don't want to be Typhoid Mary spreading a contagion there, so I stayed home.
You know. I have to tell you, man, as I was coming in this morning, there was heavy traffic backup. There was an accident around Barker Road. You don't realize it until you get caught up in that kind of traffic. And I know you've been in those kinds of situations. And so you're backed up. And so I'm doing what 99.9% of the other people are doing. There's nowhere to go, Sandy. It's a parking lot, and you're just being patient. And then there's this open lane all the way over to the right where emergency police and fire are supposed to use, and there are these nuts driving in those lanes. They can't wait, right? And I know, Sandy.
Right.
I know it's not my worry. It bothered me that these people thought, you know, their time is more important than anybody else's.
And well, the rules don't apply to them, right? That's what's happened in America. We've got this growing sort of legitimacy about people just taking matters into their own hands and, you know, deciding which rules are good, which ones are bad, applying the good ones and ignoring the bad ones.
I got to tell you, it bothered me, right? It bothered me to see these people thinking they're special. All of us.
Now, Earl, you didn't.
Huh?
You didn't experience road rage, did you? You didn't get all the way there.
In my mind, I experienced road rage. Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
it is easy.
Huh?
I find myself getting furious sometimes when I'm driving. Someone cuts me off, and seems to endanger me. And I have the Wild Kingdom kind of fight or flight instant.
Yeah. And all I could think about was what the other people who were in the parking lot on 94. Were thinking when these yahoos were driving in that lane. Man, where are they going? Well, we do know where they're going. They can't wait. What's happening with them is more important than anybody else. And you're right, Sandy. This is kind of new in our society, right?
I think it is. I mean, I think the last 8 years have found a growing number of people with this sort of this legitimacy laws, and they're good laws. I mean, part of the gun movement is people who are getting guns so that they can defend themselves when enforce bad laws against them, which suggests that they think they're in a position to judge whether the laws being enforced are good ones or bad ones.
You know, and all I could think about was, hey, where are the sheriffs, you know? Can you take down the license plates number of the person who's passing in that lane? You know, they're moving too fast, so you couldn't. But that's the time to be a good Samaritan And I don't know if it would matter anyway that people could say it didn't happen. But you just feel helpless, right?
Yeah. Yeah. This is, of course, if this is the worst thing that happens, Jiro.
I know.
You're gonna be okay.
I know, man. I just let it bother me. And, you know, because when the first guy came by, and the worst thing about it, Sandy, is I said, well, okay, they're doing it and getting away with it. Why am I sitting here?
Yeah.
And the thought came.
Yeah, but you were.
Huh?
Yeah. Were you in a lane so you could access it?
Yeah, I could have did the exact same thing. I was right there. But I've been taught better. And yeah. I can't teach other people to do the right thing if I'm going to turn around and do the wrong thing, Sandy, right? At some point.
And you'd get arrested. You could get arrested for DWB.
What's that?
Driving while black.
And all those things are possible. But more than anything else, Sandy, what it made me do was just think about how many times people are rude now in the society, more so than they've been in the past. It's something that has changed in our nation, Sandy, and I think it's never going back to the way it was. Let's go to Dave from San Francisco. Hey, good morning, Dave. How are you? Your thoughts? Oh, you're in San Francisco, man. You must really be experiencing some changes.
Well, there's a little ebullience. I was lucky enough to get on C-SPAN a couple of minutes ago and ask the publisher of the National Review if they believe in the social contract. And boy, that guy got dumbfounded. He didn't want to admit that the old rich guys don't want to give anything to the people, and the social contract is the last thing they believe in. So I feel good.
So let me say this before you move further. We feel pretty good, Sandy and I, because here you are. You're in San Francisco. You just got off of C-SPAN, and you're listening to us. That's pretty good stuff, Sandy.
You're worth it.
Well, so go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to play Paul Revere. I don't know if you've, you know this guy, Harlan Crow, the guy that's buying the Supreme Court. And apparently it's not just Clarence Thomas that he's bought. Isn't he the guy that also paid off the gambling debts of one of the judges? He was the one that sponsored the Citizens United ruling. He paid.
Yes. We're aware of who he is. Yes.
Yeah. So Harlan Crow is on the board of Thomas Jefferson's Monticello. I mean, can you imagine a creep like Harlan Crow having control of Monticello and the legacy of Thomas Jefferson?
Yeah, I think Harlan Crow, people who know him interpersonally, has some good qualities, and some of the things he's involved with are quite positive. But you know, the best thing that Harlan Crow ever did was to be the son of Trammell Crow, and that brought him lots and lots of money. And I guess he's proof of how it is that sort of ethics and a sense of ethics has eroded. So I'm sure he believes that he's doing nothing wrong. He does not believe that he's compromising these people, that he's, and the people who are getting all these benefits from him don't feel compromised. But of course they are. That's why we have disclosure requirements. That's why we have limitations on the receipt of these kind of gifts. This is why most judges are very careful about taking anything from anybody for fear that it would give the image of impropriety.
But Sandy, having heard what you just said, even judges understanding that, what do you say to judges understanding that and moving forward and taking those things anyway?
Well, I think that what's happened in Washington generally in the political range is that the boundaries, the ethical boundaries, have been completely obscured. Everyone in Washington understands that a significant percentage of the people there are looking to feather their nest financially. They all feel like they're sacrificing to take these jobs as congressmen and senators. They're surrounded by wealthy people, and they want to become part of that club. And the fact is that most of them succeed. It's unbelievable. They go to Washington, and Congress people or senators, and they emerge years later with a very big net worth. And so that doesn't happen without ethical boundaries being obscured and ignored. And the fact is that they ignore it amongst one another because they're all a part of it.
David?
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Earl. Yeah, it's kind of like the glue that holds them together is dirty money. And it's funny because money, you know, the theory behind money is that it's supposed to reflect our reputation. And if you're a good talk show host, if you're a good political scientist, you'll have more money. But if you're a crook...
Hey, don't include talk show hosts. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, if you're a crook, though, and you just steal a whole passel of money, does that actually give you a reputation? Or are you just, because you have a bunch of numbers in an account or a fat wad, you basically gain reputation solely by a piece of paper? And so that's kind of the fakeness that humans have been going through for centuries. Just because somebody's got a handful of scratch, that doesn't mean that they have a good reputation. And a good reputation is what's going to get you far. And so it's kind of funny, you know, America's faced off against this for years, but, you know, we can outvote these crooks, but the people like Harlan Crow, who basically have tons of stolen money, they basically pass it around. The guy is shameless about never disclosing what he's paid into. The guy's the biggest collector of Adolf Hitler memorabilia in America, and this rat is on the board of directors of Monticello. This guy is, like, deadly dangerous. We the people have the ability to boycott him, though.
So, David, I wish we had more time. We've got to go to a break. Thank you very much for the call. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, can you explain to me, Minnesota just joined the lottery on weed, legalizing marijuana. So we're surrounded by Michigan, Illinois, Minnesota, and Iowa is the only other, you know, state that's bordering us that does, and we have not, I mean, Sandy, we're still not allowing medical marijuana. What's wrong with us?
You know, this is it's the same thing that was wrong with us when we turned down that high-speed train running from Chicago to Minneapolis through Madison. It was sort of a matter of ideology and statement of principle that was idiotic, that was costing the state lots of money, lots of jobs, and a huge positive investment. So, you know, marijuana, I suspect, It says if states refuse to allow the sale of alcohol, I mean, there's plenty wrong with alcohol and the excessive use of alcohol, but states have long decided that that was sort, you know, the tax on alcohol is a pretty substantial tax, pretty substantial revenue source for the state. And particularly in a state like Wisconsin, where alcohol is, you know,
king.
I think we're the highest consumption states. Yeah, we're king alcohol. And so it's screwy because when you legalize the sale of marijuana, and hopefully you set it up in a manner that keeps the price of marijuana low enough in the establishments that sell it legally so that it supplants the illegal market for marijuana. You accomplish two things. You get rid of a criminal and you derive a lot of state revenue.
You know, Sandy, it's not like we would be the first ones and we would be a test state. There's almost all these other states, 23, 25 states have already said yes. So there's already a template that shows how this works and the resources and the financial resources that are associated with it, Sandy. And then the fact that you still won't allow medical marijuana, which they already know have all these positive, implications with. And yet we've got a state that steadfastly says, well, and Robin Voswell, we're not even going to consider that right now. It just doesn't make any sense, Sandy.
Well, it doesn't make any sense, and it's a place where it's evident that political ideology and statements of political principle that are not favored by the majority, but are the position of a very strident minority, and have ended up capturing the political processes. More conservative states in the entire country, almost any way that you can measure us, you know, in terms of the rate at which we incarcerate people, this question of legal or illegal use of marijuana, there's just in every fashion, we are a very conservative state that votes demonstrably very purple, right? So we've got a strident minority that controls stuff.
You know, Sandy, I'll even, you know, give in to that conservative side of things, right? Okay, so you're conservative, that's fine. But should that even interfere with things that make sense? Well, I'm a conservative, so I can't vote for legalizing marijuana. Well, there are other states, Sandy, and other conservative states that have said yes to it. I mean, there's something even more. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I mean, the libertarian, which is probably one of the most strident forms of conservatism, libertarians want government to be as small as possible and to have as little impact on human lives as possible. Libertarians have long taken the position that it should be legalized, right?
Right.
Limitation on it is an improper intrusion in government. So people like Rand Paul, undoubtedly, if they're true to their libertarianism, favor. So, but you know, it isn't even a bona fide conservative view held by all conservatives. It's just dogma. That's what it is. It's dogma.
Yeah, and you just wonder, the people can't force. 70% of the people in the state want to see marijuana legalized. And most of the people who want to see it legalized, Sandy, aren't saying it because they smoke pot themselves. They know it just makes sense. Economically, it makes sense. The fact that we keep criminalizing people because of marijuana, all those things just don't make sense anymore, Sandy.
Well, either we criminalize it or some localities have totally essentially decriminalized it, that the locality has any control. It's just it's a hodgepodge of regulations about something that many other states have reached a totally different conclusion about. So yeah, it's looking towards in the mouth. I mean, it's, you know, there's lots of revenue for the state.
Yes.
From this. And I don't think they've shown that there's been any increase in drug problem issues associated with this legalization.
All right. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, let's go to the phone lines and Tom from L.A. Good morning, Tom. How you doing?
Earl?
Yes, sir.
Oh, couldn't hear me. I couldn't hear you guys for a second. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. It doesn't seem like we are the government right now because of money and politics, like Dave said, from San Francisco, because he's absolutely correct. All the things that we want to actually have passed and invested in our lives, seem to be the things that the other side seems to, or the, I'll put it this way, the people that are bought off by either the corporation or the or by the lobbyist, don't allow it to pass. So, you got the Tavern League in Wisconsin, that is so powerful. But their day will come where they can no longer hold up, marijuana legalization in the state of Wisconsin. Needless to say, I right now, as we're talking, am in Wisconsin, back here in Durand, Wisconsin, and I'm up on my mom's rain gutters right now, cleaning them out. So, I've been put back to work. I've been put
you're
to work.
You're a good son.
I'm back here.
You're a good son.
It's all good. It's all good. But no, it's
be careful. Be careful, Tom. I hope you have someone at the bottom of the ladder, and hold maybe it. It's not your.
No, I don't want that, Sandy. I got this ladder from the next door neighbor. It's a Keller ladder, and it's actually a pretty light ladder. I'm thinking about getting one of these when I get back to L.A. They got it at Menards or somewhere like that. So, out here in the beautiful Wisconsin air, lots of bugs here. But like I said, Dave's got it right. This guy that was involved in Citizens United is the problem. I'll call him Mr. Nazi himself, with the paraphernalia that he has hanging up this thing. And you're right, Sandy, it's amazing. Some of the originators, the OG, like his father, may have been a good guy, but apparently that good guy did not teach his son to get out there and do some hard work. Instead, he just got the inheritance because he probably didn't have a inheritance tax and got all the money and out the dynasty. And, just like the Koch brothers and people like that, there's a lot of people that when they first originally started were actually doing it for altruistic reasons and did it because they knew that it was good for the whole, we the people. But these younger generations come up where they didn't have to, they just inherited their money and they didn't work for it at all. And now all they do is buy politicians. So the problem is not really completely, and you'll be shocked to hear this, but not completely the politician. It's completely money and politics. And you know, you have to have money in order to run a campaign nowadays, because you got, you know, 20,000 commercials. I mean, that alone should be a campaign ad. Are you sick of seeing all these commercials? Well, let's get money out of politics. You won't see as many of these commercials every 2 seconds that you turn your TV on.
Well, you know, Tom, people have grown so accustomed to money in politics now that we almost forgot what it was like to not have so much money in politics. And that wasn't so long ago.
No, exactly. It was just 20 years ago that Citizens United was actually, you know, sorry, I got a bug in my mouth. That it was actually passed. But, you know, you can go back to Blatty versus First National Bank and Buckley versus Vallejo, when they made corporations people, when all of this started, you know, in the first place under the Ronald Reagan Supreme Court and the Hall Amendment. And I would just urge all the people, really, again, look yourself in the mirror and ask yourself, why? Why is it that you don't believe in a return on investment? And why it is that you don't believe that we, the people, deserve the things that we put our money into rather than giving it to the military-industrial complex? Again, not the military-industrial complex. You know, I just like to see why people keep thinking that they're not worth it. They pay the money in the taxes. They may have, Sandy says it all the time, $64,000, and the job's only paying $60,000. How is a person supposed to make it in this country?
Oh, okay, Tom, man. Thank you. Thank you very much for the call. You know, Sandy, I wanted to go to the continued U.S. job growth. 350 or so thousand more jobs added last month. The economy keeps defying, Sandy, what seems to be, you know, an improbable reality. The inflation is certainly subsiding, but the economy seems to be resilient. Housing market is down. What's going on?
Well, you know, we've had just an unusual bunch of circumstances. I think all this information, all this news about the impending recession, it's like Mark Twain's, the news of my death was exaggerated or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, I think that the recession is something that obviously could happen. And the sun, the moon, and the stars could line up still for the, you know, to end up with something that is nominally a recession. But in terms of technical measurements, you know, how many quarters in a row do you have declining GDP and whatever else they're going to look at to decide officially if there's a recession. But the fact is that we've had these pockets of of labor shortages ever since the pandemic, and they haven't gone away. You know, they're still very active hiring in a bunch of the service industry jobs, and many jobs related to construction, many jobs related to the servicing of buildings and homes. And so I just think that that we are not likely to experience a deep recession unless we have, you know, unless Mrs. O'Malley's cow kicks the lantern over in some fashion and starts the fire. You know, there needs to be a precipitating event that's, and it could be the commercial real estate market. There are things where shoes are going to fall that are going to make our economy give it more tests. But right now, my view is that we're sort of experiencing this soft landing. It's perilous. You know, perilous landings are scary.
You know, Sandy, do you think that part of this, the fact that you know, the COVID situation and the impact that it had on the country is several years back now, and that, you know, one of the reasons that we're probably not or have not gone into recession is those bleak times a couple years back, and the fact that, you know, the economy had to take a hiatus for 2 years, that that's part of the reason why we, you know, things are a little bit different?
Well, I think that plus the fact that the government, the stimulus acts, the various things the government did, they worked. Lots of people were actually earning money without working, essentially. So that carried the economy through what could otherwise have been a precipitating event that would have created a very troublesome recession. But it ended up being an event that was sort of subject to being handled by the government through stimulus payments that got us through. However, the stimulus payments allowed people to relocate in terms of their vocations. And that relocation of people out of the jobs they had has created lots of shortages now of workers. And it's that worker shortage in segments of the economy that is driving the economy upward and forward now. Plus the fact the inflation was basically caused by, I think they'll use a fancy word, exogenous, meaning that it's something that's outside of the economy itself. The war and what it did to the economy was something that was imposed on the economy and didn't come from within. And so, again, that's a different kind of a causal effect. And so far, the economy is coping.
So Sandy, is it safe to say that historians, years and decades from now, will study this point in the history of this nation, and they will be able to better understand just what is going on now, more so than those of us who are living through it right now?
Well, that is the job of historians. That's what historians try to do. That's what they're supposed to do. Some things just get forgotten.
Right.
And so I think the question will be, how will historians deal with the social function, the sociocultural function of a Donald Trump, for instance, and the Trump movement? And how will they look at and examine the economy and how the government has related to the economy? A lot of that will have to do with whatever happens to our economy over the next 10 years. Will we, do we lose world dollar status, world currency status for the dollar in the next 10 or 15 years? That will have a huge impact and will cause historians to look backwards now and begin to put together, connect the dots. You can connect dots in retrospect. It's easier to do it than it is in the circumstance.
So Sandy, whether people want to give credit to the Biden regime or not, and I don't know if the credit goes to the Biden regime as much as it goes to the Federal Reserve, Sandy, it's kind of safe to say that they've kind of broken the back of inflation. I'm not saying they're clear of it, but they've certainly moved in the right direction because they brought it down from the 9% or 10% that it was under 4%, and it's still declining. Is it safe to say, it was masterful what they did?
Again,
or is it too early?
You have to look back. But it's just kind of too early because they did some massive things. This quantitative easing program, in which they bought government securities to inject trillions of dollars into the economy. This is all going to play out. And, there are people who the sky is falling kind of people who look at the size of our debt, look at the overhang created by this quantitative easing program and worry about what could happen with it. So far, so good. So far it's being unwound. And it's being unwound successfully. Unwinding it is deflationary. We've been able to have some deflationary influences without recession. So, like I said, this is a very perilous, but so far a safe landing. We're landing in some airport that has a reputation for being the most dangerous airport in the world. But we're landing.
Yeah, Sandy, I remember you constantly talking about and them talking about the soft landing. Soft landing referring to clearly recession and hurting a lot more people. It certainly didn't look like that was possible, but, they've done a masterful job of it thus far.
Yeah, you know, I think that so far the policies, you know, while they, and they were experimental in some respects, quantitative easing was sort of invented at the time of the 2008 financial recession.
All right, we've got to go to a break. The phone lines open at 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means my co-host Sandy Williams is with us. We'll be right back. At 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, U.S. life expectancy problem is bigger than we ever thought, report finds. I don't know if many of us knew that the life expectancy in our country has been in major decline for decades now. The country's life expectancy problem gained renewed attention in recent years after seeing the largest drop since World War II during the COVID-19 pandemic. As U.S. life expectancy continues to plummet, a new report found that the country has been at a life expectancy disadvantage since the 1950s, and it has only gotten worse since then. The study published Thursday in the American Journal of Public Health also shows that more than 50 countries have surpassed the U.S. in life expectancy since the 1930s, and a handful of states may be partially responsible. Sandy, how can it possibly be that a nation with the best health care in the world now is in free fall with life expectancy in our country? In this country?
Well, that's because you have to unbundle that statement about the best healthcare in the world. We have the most sophisticated healthcare delivery system, or most sophisticated healthcare available. But to whom is it available? And how many people in our society access that healthcare? And how much is our healthcare related to wellness? And how much of it is related to solving symptoms? And I think that, and if you unbundle the data about the declining life expectancy, you'll find out that socioeconomic status has everything to do with that declining life expectancy, and that that socioeconomic status has a lot to do with people living in conditions that create bad wellness for them. There's more obesity amongst those who are poor. Obesity is a direct causal agent of diabetes and heart disease, two of the things that can rob you of the longevity in your life. So, you know, it's a little bit like the movies that Michael Moore did about evaluating the truth about the things that America says about itself as compared to what the actual truth is. And this is exactly one. You said what we all repeat, which is we have the very best healthcare system in the world. But the fact is that we might have the ability to provide the most sophisticated kinds of health service to people, but it's not readily available to people. There's a great deal of problem with access to healthcare. And the kind of healthcare we provide is as the result of the way we provide it, emergency rooms basically for the poor. Does not have anything to do with fostering wellness.
So, Sandy, go ahead.
No, so it's just that the way we're dealing with our healthcare, our broken healthcare system, is all lined up with incentives that basically will drive life expectancy in our country down, not up.
So, perception is everything, because clearly most of us who don't and don't did not see it from the perspective you just explained will say, hey, yes, we have the most up-to-date technology when it comes to those kinds of things, wealthiest nation on earth, you would automatically think that that would reflect in you know, the health of the American people. But clearly you just pointed out that for those who can afford it, yes. And it's apparently it's not that way in other nations. The U.S. began seeing dramatic increases in life expectancy in the early 20th century, mainly due to public health advances, vaccines, and sanitation. The new report shows how that growth continued into the 50s, with U.S. life expectancy ranking the 12th highest in the world. However, that growth rate began declining in 1955, so that by 1968, the U.S. had fallen to 29th place. Sandy, it's almost unimaginable that now there are 50 other nations that do a better job of life expectancy than the United States of America. Something we should be worried about?
Well, of course. And what we ought to be reflecting on is our healthcare system, which is so seriously broken. And this is a symptom, and it should be a very glaring piece of evidence. It's like exhibit A of how broken our healthcare system is. It's like the result of our healthcare system is that we have the 50th lowest life expectancy in the world. So, wow, you know,
that's alarming, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the reasons we jumped so much early in the 20th century was the vaccinations and the elimination of death and childhood diseases. So we far more people lived through childhood than used to, which had a real bump effect on life expectancy. But now we've got, because of our lack of wellness and the lack of incentives toward wellness, we have a nation that's characteristically obese and out of shape and has a poor diet.
You know, Sandy, it is amazing. You know, United Kingdom, Canada, you should be able to compare with our nation, and they do such a good job of it. And you can't say, I mean, the size of our nation, Sandy, is much smaller than many of these other nations, and they get it done. You know, the fact that we only have 325 or 350 million people or so, we should be able to do a better job of this.
Yeah, we didn't get to 325 million overnight. This has been a steady growth. Our economy has grown with it, you know, and God knows we spend enough on healthcare. We spend something like 18% of our GDP on healthcare, which is far more than anybody else. And look at the results. You know, our healthcare system is so broken. We spend more than anybody, and our life expectancy is falling, and we rank in a dismal 50th.
Yeah, I mean that when I read this article, Sandy, I just could not imagine that of all the nations you would not expect us to be where we are. But you explained it so well. It's at a point where, you know, all these health discrepancies. I know people of color, high blood pressure, heart disease, all of those things that are baked into people of color and other things that happen in this country. And we can fix it, Sandy. It can be fixed. The question becomes whether or not there's a will to do it. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Always glad to have him here. We'll be right back.